This is Seattle's Morning News. Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien. We've been talking with the candidates for the 8th District Congressional seat to replace the retiring Dave Reichert. Dr. Kim Schreier is one of the Democrats. And I guess I should raise the big issue that's come up in your campaign. That's your stand on vaccines. Tell me what you said about vaccines and why you thought that was taken out of context.
Well, good morning, Dave. Thank you so much for having me here today. Boy, I'll tell you, you raise one wrong card and the whole world falls apart. You know, the fact of the matter is that I have been a pediatrician for 17 years. I have probably given over 100,000 vaccinations. And the fact of the matter is that I understand more than anybody just how important they are. So let me be 100% clear. I absolutely support immunizations. There's probably no light between my position on vaccines and Dr. Hader's position on vaccines, other than the fact that I give them and she doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, talk about the card. This was like a lightning round at a debate somewhere?
Yeah, it was a lightning round, and a question was asked about government mandating vaccines, and I misinterpreted the question, raised a red card, but the fact of the matter is that I want everybody vaccinated, mm-hmm. and it is a public health issue, not a personal health issue, and so anything that can be done to raise immunization rates, I support.
Mm-hmm. So, but there are governments that do mandate vaccines, right? Is that okay?
Well, they've done it in some states where they have had outbreaks, and I think that's a totally appropriate response.
Mm-hmm. But in terms of regular childhood vaccines, where before there's without a public health outbreak, in order to establish herd immunity, states will mandate that if you want to get into school, you have to have a vaccine. You're okay with that?
Yeah, that's how you protect our public health. Absolutely. This is not an issue of choice when it becomes an issue of somebody else in the classroom getting an illness. And if there's a child in a classroom with leukemia who can't get vaccinations and another parent chooses not to vaccinate their child, that puts the leukemic child at risk. And that is unacceptable.
So on the healthcare issue in general, were you to be elected, would you be part of this push for Medicare for All, which Pramila Jayapal and others have been pushing?
Well, I love the idea of Medicare for All. I mean, ultimately, I think that's how you get really equitable care, and I think that's where we should be headed. Here's the thing. I have moms in my practice who are crying because they can't afford their premiums. And so I don't think we have the luxury of time to wait for a rollout of Medicare for All. And I'd like to do something immediately, which is why I have a whole healthcare plan that I have rolled out that gives Medicare as a public option buy-in so that anybody tomorrow could buy into Medicare, could have that coverage. It would put pressure on the marketplace to decrease the cost of health insurance. And that way we can gradually expand Medicare as we move toward Medicare for All.
Is Medicare cheaper than private health insurance?
Yes, it is. And in fact, it has a lower overhead. It has about a 1.8% overhead as opposed to about a 20% overhead for private insurance companies. And it's a really popular program. Mm-hmm. Our seniors love it. And so I think we have this in place and expanding it nationally is the logical way to go.
But I think the reason it's cheaper is because it is subsidized by taxes, right? And isn't there some concern? We keep hearing that the Medicare Trust Fund is running short and might even run out of money before Social Security does.
You know, how we spend our money reflects our values. And I consider investing in the health of our society to be a really good investment. Healthy workers are better workers. Healthy students learn better. And ultimately, if you want more people working and paying into our tax system, then you invest in health. And frankly, the way we buy our healthcare right now is so darned expensive. I mean, the way we buy healthcare is like doing our grocery shopping at the 7-Eleven. We pay the most for it. We wait until diseases progress so they cost more to treat. We have a lot of emergency room care for people who don't have a primary care physician. And so studies have shown that if you just provide a public option, healthcare costs go down and costs go down for consumers and for taxpayers. So I will wait for a congressional budget analysis for any bill that I propose. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is that the evidence we have is that when we cover everybody, costs go down overall.
Okay. But there is a decent chance that while costs may go down overall, you will need to increase taxes on someone to make these premiums affordable if everybody signs on to the Medicare program. So, I mean, if the analysis says, okay, we can do this, but it'll mean a tax increase, would you go for that?
Well, don't forget that we have subsidies right now for the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
And don't forget that right now people are priced out. So having a buy-in public option means people who can afford to pay will pay for their health insurance. And people who don't have those means will either pay in on a sliding scale or will have subsidies. And, you know, nobody ever asks, well, isn't it going to cost taxpayer money to buy another nuclear weapon? But we always get questions about investing in our own population.
Yes, we do. I'm asking you to answer that question. And you, so it sounds like you will say, yes, this is worth it. If we need to increase taxes on some people to pay for this, we should.
Let's make sure everybody pays their fair share of taxes and that we use the taxes that we have in a way that really works for the most people in this community.
So as you go around the 8th District, what's the big issue that voters bring up to you?
You know, it's interesting. I got into this race over a year ago. And, you know, my big concern and the reason I jumped into this race was that I, as a pediatrician and a type 1 diabetic, had met with Dave Reichert's office about the ACA and how horrible it would be for the people in this district to dismantle the ACA without a good plan for replacement. And so I decided to run against him when he voted for that Trump care bill in committee. And I had no idea if healthcare was going to stay an issue or not. But it turns out that wherever I go in this district, healthcare is the number one concern.
Really? Not commuting?
No. I do hear about traffic. I do hear about traffic. It is healthcare. It's healthcare. It's the cost of prescription drugs. It's also about just the divisiveness in Washington, D.C. and having people who can work across the aisle and really truly represent their communities and not lose touch with what's going on here at home.
Yeah. So what kind of struggles do you find as you do our bill? I mean, you still have people, and we're talking middle class people. I mean, it's a fairly middle class district, right? People who are struggling to actually care for their children.
Well, in a lot of ways, the middle class is getting squeezed. I mean, getting squeezed because they don't qualify for subsidies when they're buying their insurance through the ACA. And I have moms coming to me who are paying $1,700 a month and with that have a $10,000 deductible.
Wow.
Yeah, that's why we can't wait for a rollout of Medicare for All. That's why we need to do something immediately because prices, I mean, they're having to choose between paying their mortgage or paying for health insurance. And I ran into a family recently who I have been seeing for the past 15 years, and they decided this year they're just going to roll the dice, that they spent so much.
They're going to drop the insurance?
They are dropping the insurance, and they have three children. And don't forget that you're talking with somebody who is a type 1 diabetic, and I was diagnosed at age 16. And so things do happen to children, and rolling the dice is just not something that any parent should have to do. Not something anybody should have to do.
Okay, on the transportation issue, the president did promise road programs and bridge fixes, has not yet delivered. So what will Democrats do about that? Because, again, they're going to say that it'll require an increase in the gas tax or increase in this tax, that tax. You know, what's your stand on that going to be?
Well, first of all, let's just back up a second. I mean, imagine the popularity of this president if he had started off his administration with a broad infrastructure package that was federally funded. He would have been incredibly popular. Instead, he chose to start with the ambition of dismantling the ACA, which was absolutely the wrong direction. And then he proceeded to give such a tax cut that we now have exploded the debt and we don't have the dollars, about $1.5 trillion that it would take to have a national infrastructure plan. So I absolutely support an infrastructure plan, but we have to fund it from the federal level. I mean, it is just too much of a burden to put on cities and on counties and even on states because we pay taxes so we can live in a community and in a country with interstates and bridges and infrastructure. And so we need to see our money used in that way.
All right. So you're a big fan of the infrastructure program.
Absolutely. As long as we get federal dollars for it.
Mm-hmm. There are farms in the 8th District, right?
Oh, yes.
There's a lot of rural property there. How do they feel about immigration?
Well, they have some deep concerns about what's going on with immigration. And typically, orchardists and farmers tend to vote Republican. But I have been hearing across this district that there's a lot of regret because they didn't realize when they made that vote, when they cast that vote, that they were going to have workers who were afraid to come to work, or workers who would just not show up, presumably because they were deported. I mean, what we have now is a system that terrorizes families and that does raids. And if an orchardist does not have hands to pick their apples or pick their cherries and they rot on the trees, well, then that farmer goes out of business.
Is that actually happening?
Yes, it is. And there is a ton of uncertainty about what's going on. And the fact of the matter is that when you can't plan because you don't know how many people you will have, and when this is predicted to be a fantastic year for apple crops, they are worried. Add to that that they're worried about tariffs.
Tariffs. Yeah. Well, that's going to be solved, though. I heard that the president got the European Union to buy some soybeans at discount prices.
You know, we'll see how long that lasts, and soybeans don't help our apple farmers and our cherry farmers, and they don't help Boeing. So we need trade deals, we need predictability, and we can't tolerate a tariff war.
Okay.
It's irresponsible.
You, somebody is going to face Dino Rossi in the November election. He is, I'm pretty sure, eclipsed everybody in terms of fundraising and name recognition. So for Democrats who are trying to figure out who's the best Democrat to go up against him, how do you think you stack up?
I think I am absolutely hands down the best person to go up against Dino Rossi. On all of the issues, there is a clear contrast, and I am the best contrast to him. But it's really more than that. I mean, you're right. Dino Rossi has a ton of money. He has a ton of special interest money. And what we need is a campaign that is ready to go on day one. And I have the infrastructure and the volunteers and the proven ability to raise funds and backing from the largest endorsers in this race, like Emily's List and Planned Parenthood and the Washington State Labor Council and the aerospace machinists representing 45,000 people. And those groups together have helped make Dino Rossi a 3-time loser, and they will help me make Dino Rossi a 4-time loser.
He's going to, I mean, he already has in his first ad portrayed himself as a moderate. I'm not sure, I mean, he hasn't agreed to debate or be interviewed by us. So I don't know whether he's going to seek Trump's endorsement or not. So how do you plan to portray him, or are you just going to push your positives and leave his negatives alone? Should you emerge successful here?
That would be ridiculous. We cannot sit by while he portrays himself as a moderate, because he is far from. Look, first of all, he won't come out and say where he stands on anything unless I push him. I pushed him through the Washington Post. I pushed him through the New York Times to finally come and make a comment on tariffs. That was such an obvious answer. They are destructive for our district. He finally made a comment that he disagreed with Trump on this issue. He will not come out and say where he stands on anything. And so all we have for him is his record. And if you look back at his record, he is not a moderate. He is too far right for this district. This is a moderate district, and it is not a good fit with Dino Rossi.
Do you think he is, in fact, a Trump supporter and is just fudging it, or what?
Well, look, all I have to go on is his record, and he was a Trump delegate. So, yes, I will presume based on that he is a Trump supporter, because he won't come out and say anything against this administration.
So you'll run negative ads, eh?
I will do whatever it takes to make sure we get a Democrat in the seat, because our current Congress is unable, unwilling, whatever, to stand up to this administration. And right now we need people who will. And if they're just going to roll over and play dead, then we need a Democratic majority in Congress. So I will do what it takes to beat him.
Kim Trier, Democratic candidate for the 8th Congressional District. One more question. I bring this up because, as you know, I ran for this office. Pierce County was a very difficult sell for me. I did very badly in Pierce County. So tell me about that. How are they receiving you in Pierce County?
They're receiving me well in Pierce County. I feel that when people are hurting, these are really kitchen table issues, right? When you take away people's health care, they get upset. When you threaten with immigration, they get upset. And what we're finding is that there were a lot of empty promises made by this administration, and people are unsatisfied. And so what I'm finding is that I'm doing well everywhere in this district in our polling. And in addition, we have organizers in every corner of this district. And we have knocked on over 60,000 doors.
Wow.
So we are reaching. I mean, that's how we're going to win this race. I am telling you, this is not about one person. This is not about a resume. This is about having a system and an organization to take this on like an army. And so we are reaching voters and hear consistently. I hear this at the doors all the time. wow, I can't believe you're here. No Democrat has ever come to talk with me. And that's how we're going to do it. Because, I mean, there's a couple things. One, when they see that you're taking the time to come and listen and reach them, it matters. But two, you know, they'll have less reason to vote against me. I remember you saying that at some point, that like if you at least introduce yourself and they see that you're not an evil person, that you're pretty level-headed, people will not have any reason to vote against you. And my message is resonating everywhere in the district.
Right. But I could never get any converts to go past go past the party label. So do you ever find yourself actually getting in discussions with Republicans, or do they just say?
Oh, yeah.
You do?
Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, I purposely even further engaged because I really want to know where their minds are, what they're thinking, if they have any reservations about the current administration, how they feel about chaos. I just want to know. And I also always ask, you know, how can I be your best representative? Because the fact of the matter is that when I win this thing, I'm going to be everybody's representative. And I need to know where everybody stands, not just Democrats, not just independents. I have to be the best representative. Look, we had Dave Reichert. He wouldn't meet with the public. He wouldn't hold town halls. He didn't know where we were coming from because he'd never meet with his constituency. So here I am going out and saying, look, I'm here to listen and I'm here to represent the best I can.
Is that your icebreaker at Republican doors? How do you like chaos?
My icebreaker is, here's who I am. I'm a pediatrician. I never thought I'd run for office, but the attacks on our healthcare system and our representatives' inability or unwillingness to stand up to this administration has driven me to leave a practice that I built over 17 years to take this on. And I really want to take the voices of my patients, who are not, by the way, all Democrats, the voices of my patients and their families to Congress. And it's really important that it's a member of the community, that it's somebody who has been serving the community. Gosh, and for me, it's 17 years to take those voices to Congress. Who would be better?
Kim Schreier, running in the 8th Congressional District. Kim, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave. Have a great day.